Tavis Smiley, welcome to Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks, Shai. Good to be on with you.
The Covenant with Black America was a plan of action for fixing racial disparities in America. So other than 10 being a nice round number, why did you decide to re-examine this now?
We re-examined it now because the conditions of Black America have so worsened. The suffering of Black America still tends to be rendered invisible, although it's so clear for all of us to see, I think, thanks to social media. And sadly, 10 years later, the data indicates, it pains me to say it, that Black America has lost ground in every single leading economic category. In every major economic category, we've lost ground. So 10 years later, the book needed to be updated and to see where we are, particularly as we head into another presidential election season.
Obviously, one of the major national events of the past 10 years is the financial meltdown and the ensuing recession. Do you think you can attribute any of the widening of the divide to the recession? Did it kind of exacerbate a system that was already weighted against Blacks in America?
Oh, great question, and there's no doubt about it. Yes, it was that Great Recession, as they called it, that helped wipe out Black wealth. More Black wealth, this is a damning statistic, more Black wealth has been wiped out over the last 10 years than at any point in all of America's history. This book came out in 2006, 2 years before Barack Obama showed up in the White House. So this is not about a book. This is not a book that's assessing blame or casting aspersion on him per se. The book is not about Barack Obama. There will be, trust me, plenty of books written about what Obama did or didn't do vis-a-vis Black people. I might even write one of them. But this is not that particular book. But it is the case that on his watch, ironically, in the era of the first Black president, the bottom fell out for Black America. How the historians are going to juxtapose those two facts, I can't wait to see.
Why is that? What are some specific factors that led to the kind of widening of this gap and, as you said, the erosion of Black wealth?
Well, part of it, I think, starts with Black people not making any demands. You have not because you ask not. You got to make demands. That's the way the body politic works. I mean, look at the progress that gays and lesbians have made over the last 10 years. So there are any number of constituencies that did very well over the last 10 years. Wall Street was bankrupt at one point. Now they're minting money all over again. Everybody's making money on Wall Street. It's only in Black America where we see so little progress that's been made.
And do you see any of that changing with the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement?
Oh, they certainly, I thank God for them. They have certainly raised the issue. They've put it on the map. And I'm appreciative to this generation. But what do you expect, though, from a generation that's been, you know, politically marginalized, economically exploited? What do you expect from a generation that gets sick and tired of having to endure that? You expect, you know, this kind of uprising. I believe this kind of social movement, this kind of social change is cyclical. So it's the timing is about right when you look at the calendar for there to be a movement in this country. And particularly a generation that's, you know, that's being victimized by poverty. I mean, poverty is threatening our very democracy. Poverty is now a matter of national security. You put all that together, it's an ugly, combustible mix. And so it's no surprise to me that these young Black people on college campuses and beyond, through this Black Lives Matter movement and other outlets, are starting to express themselves. And hopefully, you know, the Bible I read says, "And a child shall lead them." Maybe the young folk are going to lead us out of this.
Policing and criminal justice might be the areas that have taken on the highest visibility, certainly in the public, over the past few years. What's changed with policing, at least in terms of how America is looking at it, are these many, at this point, very high-profile shootings of unarmed Black
That's
men
right.
by white officers, many of whom haven't been charged. That changes the conversation about policing. Has it changed? Do you see it changing the substance of community policing yet?
I think it's starting to, and in the chapter that you referenced now, you'll see some data about what police departments are finally doing because this has gotten out of control. In the text, we make the point that it's called community policing, not policing the community. Too many people think it's policing the community when it, in fact, is community policing. So we got to get our operational definitions here correct so we know what we're talking about here. So there are examples in the book of police departments who are finally starting to understand that this is not sustainable, that you can't have a country where the police, where law enforcement is not trusted. Let me put it another way. The examples that you referenced earlier of seeing Black boys and Black men shot in the streets by cops and too many cops getting away with it, not being indicted, et cetera, and some of them being promoted. When we see these examples, it appears that it's the problem of Black America. Well, it is. It's Black America's problem, but it's white America's burden. Now, why do I say that? I say that, Shai, because We cannot live in a democracy. We can't live in a country where the police writ large cannot be trusted. Look at Chicago and Rahm Emanuel. I mean, Rahm Emanuel just lied. He sat on this tape for a year. He hid it. He knew about it. And now they're trying to do everything they can to rectify a situation that's out of control. He's trying to hold on to his seat as mayor. Barack Obama campaigned for Rahm Emanuel both occasions. You got to connect these dots here if you follow my point. What I'm trying to say here is that there's a reason why black people so often mistrust the police. I recognize in Philadelphia that what happened the other day there is tragic, and my heart goes out to that officer and other officers who do their job every day, who are sworn to protect and serve. So by and large, police are good people, but let's understand why so many cops are mistrusted by black people and the public writ large. And if we get to a point where we cannot trust our law enforcement, then anarchy is going to break loose in this country. So that's not a black problem. That's an American catastrophe that we'd be smart to avoid.
You know, I'm sure that you've heard from a lot of people who do not share your view of the dynamic that create some of these divides. When people look at these statistics and they say, yes, it's there are these disparities, but it's not the fault of a broken system. It's cultural. It's what's happening in a community. It's individual choices. What do you say when you kind of encounter people who kind of don't share the point of view about the underlying causes?
First of all, everybody always agrees with me. So I don't know what you're talking about. That was a joke, Sean. No, I do meet people who disagree with me, of course, and that's healthy. You know, debate is healthy. I don't mind skepticism. I just can't tolerate cynicism. So when people are skeptical and they want to debate, I'm happy to do that. So having said that, when I encounter people who disagree, you know, I want to hear their point of view. But again, only if that point of view is relevant to the data and not to a bunch of emotions. And at the end of the day, here's what I've learned in writing this book and the one I did 10 years ago, that on most all of these issues, Shy, it's not an either or solution. It's a both and. That is to say, it's about black people holding themselves responsible before they attempt to hold other people accountable. In that sense, again, it's not either or, it's both and that is applicable, I think, to all 10 of these covenants in this new book, The Covenant 10 Years Later.
And I should point out that in each of these chapters, you have, you know, sort of solutions that individuals can take, individuals can take, and steps the government can take, and steps that, you know, communities can take. With that out there, you know, on criminal justice, and, you know, an interesting thing has happened since the book came out. You have both Democrats and Republicans calling for big reforms in the criminal justice system, including, you know, in our area, governor and presidential candidate Chris Christie, particularly with respect to drug crimes. Did you foresee that when you first wrote this book 10 years ago?
I did not. I didn't want the narrative and didn't believe the narrative 10 years later would be that we'd lost ground in every major economic category. That saddens me. But there are moments for optimism, and if not optimism, certainly hope in this book. And that's one of them, that on criminal justice reform, there finally is a bipartisan conversation about what can happen. Oftentimes in this country, we do the right things for the wrong reasons. That is to say, that we come to the right solution, but not the way that I would prefer we got there. Put another way, we end up making decisions based upon economics and not based upon moral concerns. But if we get there, I'll celebrate it. And I think there are any number of moral concerns, as laid out brilliantly by Michelle Alexander in her book, The New Jim Crow, for why we need to be rethinking the way we do criminal justice. But if it's the economics of prison overcrowding and, you know, cost per prisoner and et cetera, et cetera, if it's the economics that get us to a conversation about reforming our criminal justice system, I'll take it, Shy, any way I can get it. But I think you're right, and the book points that out, that there is hope that on the criminal justice reform issues that we can get a bipartisan consensus, but only, again, in this election if voters demand that. And that's why this book is so important. It lays out the agenda, what we can do, how we can exercise our agency to make demands on the things that matter most to all of us.
Tavis Smiley, congratulations on the book, and thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Shy, for having me on. Appreciate you.